Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, as always, here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. Got a jam-packed show today. It's going to be mostly earnings and questions from our chat because we have a hundred, feels like, earnings stocks today. So we'll talk about as many of them as we can in no particular order. We'll hit on TXN, Ford, the airlines, Xilinx, F5 Networks, BMY. Yeah, I mentioned the airlines already. It's just a ton of earnings. So we'll get to as many earnings as we can. We'll cover some with our guests as well. Mark Chaykin, he will join us at 8:15. He's the founder of Chaykin Analytics. Quick, real fast, Joel, how are things doing in the overnight session? Joel, can you hear me? Unmute yourself.
I know. I was just trying to type.
Joel, we're 10 seconds into this show.
No, I told
him. Pick on
I told
you.
Him to mute himself. Picking
on
I sometimes. Told him to mute himself. I told
it's
him
like to... you're a rookie with that mute.
No.
Through. We're going to teach you something. The big line through the little microphone, the little blue microphone, that's mute. You needed to be picked on for that one.
Okay. Listen, I'm looking. I'm trying to answer two chats. I'm trying to decide what S&P numbers to give you. Answer. So I'm in a fast market. Okay. S&P futures are trading. You got me. You guys got me. Actually,
you've never done it off the hop. I don't think he's ever done it right off the hop.
I don't think so.
You know what? Can I blame this new Skype too? I cannot figure
new
out.
New Skype sucks. I hate New Skype.
Yeah, New Skype. Yeah, and they're banning it in China, I heard. but anyways, the SPOOs are up 3.25 points here at 26.41.50. Tight range overnight. And as I mentioned, the spinner, we've had a big range. We had that 400-point drop yesterday. We came back. But the market is really trading a lot at this 26.40 area. So, quiet ranges. I'm looking for a big move, you know, maybe Friday and the expiration or something. But we really wound up into a little bit of a tizzy here. Crude is down 37 cents at 52.25. Gold down $6 at 1278 even. Silver in the red by 9 cents at 1529. And we just got a ton of earnings to cover here. And I guess, do we want to start with the good or with the bad? Where do you want to go?
Let's start with the airlines because we had a number of them. So let's just go through the airlines one by one here. And we'll start with American. AAL reporting this morning, Q4 EPS, $1.04 is in line with the estimate. Sales, $10.9 billion. A slight miss, but more or less in line with the estimate there. Fiscal year EPS guidance coming in, that is in line. Actually, yeah, that's in line. And their TRASM guidance, which is total revenue per available seat mile, is going to be flat to up 2% on a year-over-year basis. AAL.
Flying, both airlines are flying. Do LUV too. We'll do them together because we're going to be tight with so many stocks reporting earnings here. Give us the LUV numbers too because they're both flying.
LUV, Southwest Airlines, Q4 EPS, $1.17 versus $1.07. Estimate, sales 5.7 versus 5.67 billion miles, so beat on both the EPS and sales for Southwest, and that's what I got.
Nice pop for both stocks here. We'll talk AAL first. It's trading up at 33.30, which puts it up 5.2%. Then you also got LUV trading up 5.2% as well. Paratrader's got this thing right in line here this morning. It's a big pop. AAL was sitting near the lows. LUV was significantly off its lows. Now you get the pop-up. If I'm looking for resistance, I'll say 55 on LUV. On AAL, you're kind of $34. That's where you topped out a couple times there, so about 70 cents away from there too. So I think the major resistance point is well-defined. That Mr. Alcona can find the minor resistance point, though.
Street leading the wrong way into this report. Two bad days for AAL, but now getting a pop. Pre-market high that just comes in the 33 handle, 33.75. But that 34 area sticks out. I'll be using your two-day high 38.88, your three-day high, 34. Still a ways away to get there, so maybe it won't crack it today, but above 34, it looks good. Coming back on the downside, we closed right near the lows of the session, 31.39, 31.65, but you don't need much for a gap fill. 33.10 was yesterday's high. So if you're so inclined to play a gap fill, there you go, 33. But I wouldn't wait to 32.70 to, you know, figure out I'm wrong on it. And I had great flights. I flew American for the first time in a long time, like 6-7 flights over the last month, and they were excellent. So my upgrade to AAL coming through here. Love is trading right at that. That's a big move for Love, Dennis. Can it actually stay up $2.70 here?
It's usually a thicker one, and it's a good point. Typically, LUV trades with a lower beta than a lot of the other airlines there. They do the hedging. They do some other more conservative stock. I don't know. I don't know if I'm chasing it here, but I think if you're shorting it, I still see, well, you had all those highs. You know what? You can make an argument, all those highs of 53, 53.50 there in November. So
yeah,
Right where you're trading at right now. I'm not chasing up here. I think there's more downside than upside at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to get the highs of the session. Maybe just let it fluff out and see what that pre-market high is. Because I see what you're saying here. If you could clear 54, there's 54.17. There's not much up until 55 handle. But, man, this thing was just at $44, 44.35 at the end of December. Now you're at $10 added to that. I don't know. It'd be hard not to take profits if it was me.
Jump over.
There's one more JetBlue. Let's do JetBlue.
We might as well do them all.
While we're on the airlines, JBLU, sure. Q4 EPS, 50 cents versus a 43 cent estimate. So beat there. Sales $1.96 billion is in line with the estimate. So a EPS beat, in line sales, more or less, for JetBlue.
You're kind of hanging out near those couple double tops, 1770, 1771. Let's see what it does there. Can it get up there? Can it hold over there? Next stopping point would be 18.
Yeah.
The kind of 50% retracement of the overall move. If you look from December down from 19 down to 15, you know, that 17.5 area. I mean, it kind of around the 50% retracement, a little bit over it there maybe now, but I'm not that excited coming here by these airlines.
Wow. I mean, you've had a wall at 1770, 1762, 62, 71, 71, and 59. You're now above it. So you could be looking for a possible breakout here. After that, I don't know if there'll be any size at 18 in it, but, you know, it's a good report. You're clearing resistance here. I like it. I'd even like it if I could get it unchanged, but that's down at 1724. But airlines looking good. And so far with earnings.
Jump over to all the chips, because this is what's really moving here this morning. Yeah. Moving last night, continuing to move here this morning. The driver probably for a little bit of a market rally as well, because you got LRCX with a nice rebound here this morning. You also got Texas Instruments that reported last night. You got Xilinx that reported last night, up $8 here. Lots of tech stock earnings here to talk about. Give us a few of those numbers there, Spencer.
ST Micro as well. So we'll start with the biggest, which is Texas Instruments. Q4 EPS, $1.27 versus $1.24. Sales 3.71 versus 3.75 billion. So a slight sales miss and a slight EPS beat on the Q4. The Q1 EPS guidance for Texas Instruments was in line, but a little light on the low end of the range there. The estimate was more towards the high end of the range, and the sales guidance for Q1 coming in line as well. Same story, estimate was near the high end of the range that they gave. You want to do technicals on TXN first?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
You know, man, I mean, you have the street leading the wrong way the last two sessions, and then you're getting all back in one pre-market session. I mean, it's, you know, you got to think, if you had sellers over the last 2-3 days and now you get another pop, are they going to reemerge here? Up $1.93 at 97.42, right at yesterday's high. So I like to see us hold right in here. Then your next daily high is 98.43. If, in fact, we don't hold this 97.40 area off the open, you don't have much down to the close at 95.49. So it's hard when the street's leading the wrong way, then you get the pop. Are they just going to, you know, come back in and sell it, Dennis? Any technical thoughts on this one? I mean, I look at these stocks, it's kind of like no man's land.
$100. I mean, it got up there 3 days ago. That's where the major resistance is, 97.5. I say no man's land here too. I'm sitting on hands at 97.5. I'd be a seller in the upper 99s. Probably if it comes back down. The problem is if it comes back down all the way to 95, then you think it's going to take out those. So so I got to look more as a seller of up near the $100 area. But, you know, it's a chip rally here this morning because the big one here, I would say, this morning is Lam Research, LRCX. That's rallying $8.
Yep.
It's a stock that's been in the doghouse. And we've saw lately that the dogs are barking. The dogs have been barking in January, really. I mean, a lot of the stocks that were very weak in 2018 have had a pretty good 2019. IBM definitely one of those as it rallied into the number and then it continued to rally into the number. Lam Research was a complete dog in 2018, too. We can just go out to the monthlies and look. And obviously, at one point in 2018, Lam Research was $212. You know, it went out the year. We're talking about down at about 140, so 70-point sell-off there from the highs for Lam Research. Getting some of it back, trying to maybe try to test that 150. I think we did after hours. Spencer, what are the numbers? LRCX.
Yep, earnings beat guidance in line and a buyback. So the Q2 EPS earnings, $3.87, beat the $3.66 estimate sales. $2.52 versus $2.5 billion. So that there's the earnings beat. Q3 guidance was in line, $3.20. $3.60 was the EPS range they gave for the Q3. That was in line. Sales guidance, $2.25 to $2.55 billion. Also in line. And that buyback, $5 billion.
So huge buyback. They're trying to do everything to prop their stock price up. I'm just going to say, if you're chasing it up here, you're chasing somebody else's profits, $123 back on just on the low there from the 24th. Now you're almost 150. You got a lot of resistance points. If we look in November, December, just over 150. So I'm going to call that whole area resistance.
And the after hours charts agree with that. 150.47 was your after hours high. Your three-day high comes in at 149.88. I also saw a pair of highs right around 150.30. So yeah, that's going to be a big area. It will have to rally another $2.50 to get there. I'm not ruling it out, but if this thing gets to 150, closes over 150, I'd be really impressed today. And then besides that 150 candle, boy, you got just a lot of room on the upside on this one. But getting a head start, up 818 and 147.51.
ST Micro and Xilinx also reporting this morning, same sector. ST Micro, Q4 EPS, 46 cents versus 44 cents. Revenue, 2.65 versus 2.64 billion dollars. So slight beats for ST Micro's Q4. The Q1 sales guidance was actually a little bit light.
This is ADR, right? The STI?
Yeah, or? So it's already priced. Yep. It's already priced. Okay. Price discoveries happen. The semis are all popping here, so there isn't really much to talk about when you talk. We come here, and just to clarify, we're coming here at 8:13 in the morning, and we start talking in ADR. Well, this was already priced over trading in Europe as early as, when's the Europe open? 2:30? Is that right? 2:30? I think it's 2:30. Anyway, so I think 2:30. So it's been trading here for 5.5 hours already. So price discovery has already happened in STM. They've priced this in a 15.38, 15.40. There's not going to be any wild moves on this one. One thing I do want to go back to, though, on LRCX is Applied Materials always trades with LRCX. Those two, I pair up as well a lot of times, and a lot of your pair traders trade those together. Applied Materials getting a nice pop off the LRCX earnings. I mean, LRCX up 6.3. Here's Applied Materials up 4%. So that's a beautiful sympathy move there. And a lot of your chip stocks, like we've been saying, are all popping there. And the Xilinx is helping it too, which we'll get to in 1 second. But let's quickly to give some levels on AMAT. I do own this in my long-term portfolio. I'm getting close to back to even on this one there, Joel. So should I be dumping when I get back to even?
Had a nice rally up $1.39, 35.70. I mean, the longer it takes to get over 36, to clear 36, the more I'm looking for back and fill. 36.32 has been the high of the rebound. So, man, this chart looks like the other ones too. It was didn't have a report, but it sold off the last 2 days with the market. But love to see it close over 36 in this one.
All right,
jump over to the Xilinx report, XLNX, because that's a huge move as well. Kramer pick.
Yep, I'll do that as I bring on Mark Chaykin from Chaykin Analytics. Oh, so XLNX. Mark Chaykin. Hey, Mark, how's it going this morning?
It's going very well. All right. Are we live?
We are live, and before I roll to you, I want to just real quick read these XLNX numbers here. So Q3 EPS, 92 cents versus 85 cents. Nice beat. Sales, 800 million versus 770 million. So nice beat there as well. Q4 sales guidance coming in well higher than estimates. 815 to 835 million is the range they gave. 775 was the estimate. So a very nice beat all around the board for XLNX, hence the pre-market action here. And Mark, you said to me overnight that you are in buy the dip mode. So tell me or tell us what stocks you buying the dip on.
Well, I'm looking at a sort of mixed bag of stocks because I think this is really a stock picker's market. So retail, Dollar Tree, really has a wonderful chart. Hard to find a good chart in this market. Foot Locker looks pretty interesting there. I'm also watching technology. And I love the Xilinx report. Even more importantly, I like the Lam Research report this morning.
Yeah.
Lam makes the equipment that drives semiconductor manufacturers, and the report was really powerful. So the chart was sort of basing and looking for an impetus to break out. We got that impetus here. I think you don't chase stocks, though. You got to buy them on pullbacks.
This, Mark, obviously, we've got Lam Research, Xilinx. You're seeing a rally across the board in the chips this morning. Applied Materials, we just said, is up 4% in sympathy. You can go to Western Digital. That's trading up over a buck. STX is trading up this morning. Micron, a little bit weaker because he had some DRAM pricing. So Micron did get an initial lift, then some DRAM pricing. Actually, Micron's going to, I take that back. Micron got it all back. Last night, Micron was trading up. Went down a little bit on the DRAM price and then rallied all the way back up too. So Micron's up 3% here too. The chips are all hot here. Do you think the chips have bottomed?
They look like they've bottomed to me. And that's not surprising because the negative psychology in that group was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
The real question about chips, and we started raving this last January. The assumption was in January when NVIDIA and Advanced Micro were making new highs day in and day out that the chip stocks had gone from being, sort of cyclical stocks that went up and down with the economy and with overcapacity and undercapacity to, you know, secular growth stocks. They're not secular growth stocks. So we got this huge haircut in the prices of these stocks from AMAT to Lam Research to Micron. I think you've got to go with the companies that give somebody an edge. So I love Lam Research. We recommended Cadence Design, CDNS, which was within a point of its 52-week high on Friday last week, had a bit of a pullback. I think you can buy the chip stocks, but you want to look for companies, as I say, that have an edge. I don't think Micron has an edge because I do think DRAM pricing is still a commodity, even though they may have escaped one of the down cycles here.
Jump over. We've had a lot of stocks report earnings. We're getting into the heart of earnings season. We're going to get a lot of big guns here tonight. Let's just talk chips one more time. I want to talk Intel with you because they're going to report here after the bell. Intel is getting a sympathy lift here, obviously, with all the chips trading higher as well. Stock that's kind of, it didn't get hit as hard. Back in December, Intel held up much better than a lot of other chip stocks, obviously. And maybe it's because it's probably best of breed, maybe this is a safer play. But you're kicking around the highs here for the year at $48. We put in a lot of tops at 49. What are your thoughts on Intel going into the number?
I don't think Intel matters as much as they used to, even though they're still the big dog in semiconductors. I think that some of the specialty manufacturers like AMD and NVIDIA and the equipment manufacturers are a better tell. Intel sort of in a trading range, just to be clear, Intel, the high 52-week high is 56. So it's trading near a six-month high or a three-month high, but not a 52-week high.
Yeah.
So I don't have that much interest in Intel. Obviously, the better their report is, the better it is for everybody else in the group. But if I'm going to play this group where there is cyclical risk, I want to play it in the stocks that give me the biggest bang for the buck. And you've identified a number of them already in our conversation.
What do you think of NVIDIA? You just mentioned it. I'm actually bought NVIDIA just recently in my long-term portfolio because I feel it's bottom too. Might have been early. I'm about 151. It's 152, so I guess I'm right here. Thoughts on NVIDIA here? Do you think the NVIDIA bottom is in, and would you be a buyer?
Our power gauge rating is bearish on NVIDIA. It did turn bullish on Lam Research. So I'm going to go with the power gauge rating, money flow,
staying out,
the relative strength. Yeah, I'd stay out of NVIDIA. I love some of the markets they're in, but obviously there was a lot of hype based on the Bitcoin mining. I think that game has played out.
And, talk about the power gauge rating just for a second there, Mark, because how exactly because obviously, you know, if they're in downtrends, they're typically going to be, you know, in a bearish power. When do they turn? When does a power gauge rating turn? Like for Lam Research, you said it recently turned. What does it take, you know, from a stock to go in your power gauge rating from bearish to bullish?
That's a good question. The most sensitive factors in the rating are analyst estimate revisions, earnings surprise, and analyst opinion changes. So when they, as a group, the analysts, sort of their sheep, they follow one another. There's usually an alpha dog who leads the pack. So that can change. In the case of Lam Research, the technicals started to improve. The financials metrics, very strong on Lam. Earnings are strong. But typically what causes a change is either relative price performance moving up. Because if a stock's in a downtrend, it might have a neutral rating if the underlying factors in the power gauge are bullish. That's the case with Lam and has been. Case of NVIDIA, the underlying factors are stretched. So just let's look at the financials because a lot of people don't focus on that. You look at free cash flow, you look at price to sales, return on equity, very little debt in Lam. So the financial metrics, the value factors, if you will, are strong. If we go to NVIDIA and look at the same factors, and we're not picking on it, price to book very low, price to sales very high, price to book very high rather, and not a lot of free cash flow. So those are the metrics that sort of value investors look at. Now, if you're a trader, you say, well, what do value metrics matter to me? Well, they do matter because they affect the big investors, the big institutional investors who, when momentum is not in vogue as it isn't in these stocks, then you got to fall back to people who are making decisions based on fundamentals. So in a momentum driven market like we had all through 2018, you can be in an NVIDIA even if the financials are stretched or poor. When you get out of a momentum driven market, and clearly we've been out of that since September, then you've got to fall back to the fundamentals. That's when they matter.
They're interested in the power gauge a little bit deeper there. Hunter 69 asking, because he said you have analysts in there. Do all analysts have an equal weight rating, or do you obviously give more weight to maybe some of the big dogs?
Well, that's a service that some people provide, like Zacks and Starmine. What we do is look at the rate of change of analyst estimates. So there is a case to be made, TipRanks does some of that, that the companies that the analysts that have the best records are the ones that you sort of want to follow. But you don't want to just follow their estimates. You want to see when they move away from the pack, either up or down. So when a very highly regarded analyst with a good track record in a particular stock or industry moves away from the pack, you take notice. We're a little less sophisticated or granular. We just look at the trend of the estimates over 13 weeks. So are analysts raising or lowering their estimates? Are they changing their opinion? That's typically what starts to change when a stock's been in a downtrend. Or in the case of a company like Apple, when it peaked at 230, as soon as Tim Cook said, not going to give you any numbers anymore, analysts started lowering their estimates. Not because they knew anything, they just sort of were uncomfortable. Maybe they sensed that that was a precursor to some negative numbers, but the bottom line is analysts still matter, so you've got to follow them.
All right, Mark.
Mark, we're just...
Yeah, before we let you run, I wanted to know what other names you were looking to buy the dip on in other sectors outside of the chips.
Insurance stocks, I think, very strong. You've got a case to be made for companies like Progressive. You've got some of the financials that look good. TD Ameritrade reported a great quarter. Interactive Brokers, not so good. I like the TD Ameritrade report because it tells me that the individual investor is alive and well. Interactive Brokers deals more with a semi-professional or professional because it's more of a, you know, an industrial strength platform. But I like the fact that TD reported good numbers. The banks are reporting good numbers, but you got to be selective there. So Bank of America and Citi look great. JP Morgan, which should be leading the pack, is just not looking that good technically. So I think you buy the dips in some of the bank stocks. Some of the regionals have reported really good numbers. So you can go there. But basically, this is a mixed bag kind of market. You know, they're easy to trade when the technicals are smooth and clear cut. This is a choppy market. That's why you got to buy the dips here. And I think there's still more digestion of this big rally to come. 2,700 is going to be a very hard hurdle for the S&P 500 to overcome. But I think in this range between 2580 and 2630, you've got some great buying opportunities.
Mark, real quick, just drilling down into the first two stocks you mentioned, what is particularly interesting about the Dollar Tree and Foot Locker charts? And then also, what time frame are you using, daily or weekly on those two stocks?
Well, I always like to use weekly, but I'm a little bit lazy. So the daily chart is the default that comes up. I like the fact that Dollar Tree broke out of a base. This is a classic Wyckoff pattern. We pick it up beautifully with our relative strength indicator. So you got that breakout above 86, traded up close to 100. You've now pulled back under 95. I like that kind of action. It's holding the 21-day average. It's been outperforming the market since early December, and the power gauge turned bullish. So what this says to me is there's sort of, I guess if you're an O'Neill advocate, there's a little bit of a cup forming, but I like this pattern because the stock has broken out from a long-term base. In terms of Foot Locker, you've got a really good response to the market. The power gauge has been bullish for almost a year off and on, and it's maintained an uptrend. So here's a stock that's leading the market. It made or equaled a 52-week high last week. I always love that. I mean, if you're looking to buy in a market that's been in a downtrend, the leaders typically show themselves before the market really breaks out again to the upside. So a stock like Foot Locker, Cadence Design, trading near a new 52-week high, that's not a defensive stock. The defensive stocks will have done well. In this case, they took a big haircut in December. That's what I like about these stocks. Trading well, outperforming the market. The numbers are good. Foot Locker reports on March 1st. Analysts are raising their estimates. So there's a lot to like about these stocks. And, you know, Dollar Tree makes sense in a market where the expensive goods stocks are just not cutting it yet. Go to the basics.
All right. We've been on with Mark Chaykin, the founder and CEO of Chaykin Analytics. Mark, as always, thanks for the time. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Be my pleasure. Good luck, guys. Good luck trading, everybody.
All right. 8:28 now. Yep, Joel, what's up?
Someone just put in here, Mr. Draghi is speaking in 15 minutes. So, I would say he usually moves it up here, but we'll see. The S&Ps we're just hanging out here up 5.25. We've had a real tight range really since we started the show. So up 5 and looking good here with all these earnings reports, pre-market high 45.5. Not much up there. Coming back on the downside, our close is at 38.25. We're going to have imbalances here.
Let's quickly talk S&Ps because this is a tricky couple of candles. So we've had a significant run up. We had the big down day, we know, 2 days ago. We were up yesterday morning, and then we gave it all back, actually made a new low just from the previous day. But then we had the strong rally at the end of the day. So buy the dip mentality still in there. I don't know how to read these two candles. I mean, you can read them, but because we closed strong, makes me think that there's still the buy the dip mentality kicking around here. We do get a nice rally in the chips this morning. These are some of the most beaten down stocks. We are getting a nice rally in a few other stocks like the airlines as well. So earnings pretty good here this morning. But thoughts going forward here, Joel, because these S&Ps, are looking mixed kind of last couple days.
I know. And you had the long session, you know, Sunday, Monday, you know, with the holiday. And just from a weekly perspective, I mean, you're trading right at the weekly pivot. You have a couple closes in this area. I mean, I think it's just an indecision. And when I mentioned the consolidation, the ranges, instead of being 80, 90, 100 points, we've had 30 or 40 point ranges. So I think the better that we can just stay up here and hold and hold and hold and hold, then it's a consolidation to go higher. We're just not, you know, they had a chance to bust it on Tuesday. We came back. They had a chance to bust it on Wednesday. And we came back.
Yeah,
here,
it makes me feel like the bulls still got some control here.
Yeah. Yep.
It was a scary candle 2 days ago, but yesterday's candle makes me feel a little more comfortable with some of the long positions. So I'm real mixed here. I'm real mixed.
Yeah, me too.
I'm still sitting with a lot of cash. We know that. I put a little bit of it to work. And obviously, you know, I've just done a little bit of jockeying, but I'm still sitting with a lot of cash in my portfolio. I think it's over 35%. So, and that's because I'm nervous because I keep waiting for this rally to, you know, to tinker out here, but it's not. It just keeps holding on. So I think 260 is going to be my line in the sand again, because that was kind of the level we talked about on the way up. We bounced there really, you know, we bounced just a little bit before it the last couple of days. So it looked like old resistance becomes new support. They might defend it there. Take out the 260, take out the low from yesterday. Then it starts to get interesting for the bears. But right now, I think bulls still got a little bit of control.
We'll give a question here about Take-Two Interactive. And they must have had some bad news yesterday because you just got crushed here.
Yeah,
trading,
they did.
Yeah, what was the news on that?
I
don't know.
It had news. It was a game. Let me do a look here. Right. Take-Two. It was Activision got hit too, but Take-Two had something too.
Wow, I totally missed this one yesterday. Holy cow.
You have it?
No,
have the news? I don't have it in front of me either. There was somebody was talking about it.
Someone to check it out. Yeah, I'll track it down too, but wow, what a wash.
Yeah, I got crushed. I mean, all the gaming stocks did. EA was down pretty significantly. ATVI was down again. I own ATVI in the long-term portfolio. It's not been good so far. Take-Two, obviously, it got hit a little bit harder than any of the other ones. It's a scary candle for Take-Two.
Yeah,
it's a big red candle. It closes right on support. If you get some follow through here, this could easily take out all those lows. 97.57 is the low of the whole move back from November 20th. That's where, if it takes that out, scary to be long.
Yeah, Ryan in the Google chat says Pinkerton lawsuit for TTWO. So I can't confirm or deny that. But boy, sitting on the lows of the move, your December.
What just
low,
happened? S&P's just rolled over, Joel. S&P's just rolled over.
Is it the Dragster?
Yeah, we just lost five handles. Not that that's huge, but that's fairly significant.
Okay, it could be. Russ, we're miles and miles from resolving China trade issue. That's a quote here.
Who said that?
Ross. Wilbur Ross.
That's what's the catalyst here. So they're getting hit.
Yeah.
So we definitely got some stuff getting hit here this morning right now. But and we're trying to hold on to scratch. So yeah, let's see what we do here.
Yeah, I'm just going to go back here to that Take-Two. I mean, you're fighting a big red candle there. If you want to lean on the December low, 98 even, I mean, that had to be your stop out point, but I'm not rushing out to buy this one. And also, I mean, this thing's been hit, but it hasn't been hit anything like the ATVI or the EA. So I don't know. I just would be very, very, very careful on this one. EA's had a little bit of a rebound, but that stock was cut in half. And so I'd just be a little cautious on the Take-Two. We're now, we are continuing to go red here. We are down $2 here, 36 and a quarter. So I don't know. We'll see. It's definitely a two-way market here. And for a while it looked pretty good, but just getting hit. We'll see what Draghi says when he comes out here in a few minutes. So you want to take a break here and dial up Mr. Johnson?
Yeah, let's go grab. I think we're going to be able to get Gordon Johnson, I hope, on today's show. So we're going to take a quick break and grab Gordon Johnson, the managing director of the Vertical Group. He's one of our favorite, if not our favorite, sell-side analyst, and we'll be right back in a moment, hopefully, with Gordon Johnson. And welcome back, everyone. As promised, we are on the line with Gordon Johnson, Managing Director of the Vertical Group. Gordon, how's it going today?
Excellent. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine, doing fine. Let's start off. We have a number of stocks we want to hit on, and we'll start with Tesla first, since you said it's top of your mind this morning. So Tesla, you know, technically speaking, which is the way we talk about it a lot, you know, it's run up against that level, that 300 level. It's now below it, of course, 287. But what are your thoughts here on Tesla?
Yeah, I mean, we think Tesla has major issues, and we can't stress that enough. I mean, think about this. Tesla operates in an extremely capital-intensive car industry. They've had virtually no competition up until essentially now. They're trading at 6 to 7 times sales. They're letting significant parts of their sales force go, and they're facing significant and real competition, literally beginning right now. So we think, even at these price levels, we think the valuation is extremely aggressive. We always said that 3Q was their peak in earnings. We think their shipments in Q1 are going to be down roughly 40%. And just very quickly, the reason why is if you look at their U.S. composition of Model 3 sales and overall car sales in the fourth quarter, it was over 50%, when usually that average is 40%. The reason is because they pulled forward a bunch of demand via their incentive being cut in half in the U.S. in the first, basically January 1st, 2019. And keep in mind, in Georgia in 2015, when they cut their $5,000 incentive, the next month in 2015, EV sales are down 80%. So we think there's going to be a huge decline in the U.S. If you move to the EU, essentially in the Netherlands, you had significant sales growth for Tesla, primarily weighted towards the fourth quarter of 2018. The reason that was is because they had a tax on EVs, EV cars above 50,000 euros, 4%, that jumped to 22% January 1. We think Netherlands sales are going to be down 80% in Q1. And if you look at the rest of Europe, in the fourth quarter, year over year, their sales are down pretty much across every country, anywhere from 20 to 40%. Germany being down 40%, the UK being down 20%. So if you assume their Q1 sales in Europe are down just 20% year over year, and you assume their Chinese sales and rest of the world sales are flat, which is highly unlikely, you get roughly a 40% decline in their total cars sold, significantly more weighted to Model 3. We think the margins are going to be horrible. We think they're going to burn a ton of cash, and we don't see a way out. We think that realization is coming to the forefront. Clearly, Elon Musk cut earnings the other day and also cut expectations on volumes, but we think it gets worse. Look, we thought 1H19 was going to be their time to shine. In the second half of this year, you have the Audi e-tron, you have the Jaguar I-Pace, which are already selling in the U.S. and Europe, and you have the Porsche Taycan coming. Porsche said they're going to increase their production. They were expected to produce 20,000 Taycans this year. They've upped that to 40,000. That is the Tesla killer. We think they have major problems this year. We would be aggressively shorting the stock.
Well, Gordon, you also thought that the legal troubles, which now appear to be past them, at least that we know of right now, you thought that would be their downside a few months ago. So now that they're past that, though, doesn't it seem like this company is just resilient?
No. I want to be clear. They are not past that. There is currently, I believe, 2 SEC investigations and 1 Department of Justice investigation ongoing. There's an issue with respect to the amount of deliveries Tesla is stating versus IHS registrations. Tesla is stating significantly more deliveries, to the tune of roughly 40% than IHS registrations. The car industry experts have highlighted that number being 2%, at 2% being a concern. With Tesla, it's roughly 40%. We do not believe their legal issues are done. This isn't our belief. This is factual. There's ongoing investigation. But we're trying to stay away from that topic because we don't want to focus on that, because that's not the crux of our thesis. Our thesis on Tesla has always been, when competition comes, they're in big trouble. And we think that is indeed playing out now.
Gordon, what about the last quarter when they showed a profit, and it showed a pretty good profit there. Is that just a one-time blip and not sustainable? Can you just talk, you know, about, you know, that quarter and what your thoughts were on it? Because the street obviously liked it. It rallied significantly. It sold off since, but they did show a profit for the first time.
That is a great question. So think about this, right? In 2016, Tesla said, we're opening up reservations for Model 3. It's going to be a $27,500 car, including the $7,500 tax credit. You're going to have free supercharging forever. And you're literally going to be able to climb in the back seat of your car and drive coast to coast. The car will drive itself. With that prospect, they were able to garner 455,000 reservations. Each of those reservations, you had to put down 1,000 to garner that reservation. The reality is the car costs $60,000. Supercharging is not free. And in fact, they just raised prices that in some cases is higher than gas costs. And clearly people have died relying on Tesla's self-driving technology, which has proved to be vaporware. It doesn't even really exist. So my point is this. In the third and fourth quarter of last year, they essentially fully worked down the backlog of real buyers at a $60,000 level for the Model 3. We believe they fully worked through that backlog. So you had two quarters. One quarter, he's already said the profit margins in 4Q are going to be worse. But you have one quarter of profitability basically exacerbating that, you know, backlog of people who are willing to buy. And it was significantly less than the 455,000. So now what we're going to see in Q1 is what is real tangible demand for Model 3s, right? What is demand without, you know, 2 years of essentially fictitious backlog? And we think it's extremely low.
Wait, Gordon, who has died relying on Tesla's technology?
Oh, I mean, there's been a documented, I think the running rate now is 55 deaths, not all associated with full self-drive, but some of them have been associated with full self-drive. These things are grossly underreported. And when Elon Musk states that Tesla is the safest car on the road, in our view, based on our analysis, which we continue, that is grossly, grossly incorrect. There have been people that have died when Tesla's full self-drive mode was on. I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, but that dynamic is 100% true. We stand by that.
All right, I want to move on.
There's a website that tracks the deaths globally associated with Tesla, and I think the number is approaching 50 or above 50. And when you do the calculations, we did the calculations, you're roughly 3 to 4 times more likely to die driving a Tesla than you are a BMW, Mercedes, or other luxury brand.
All right.
We're on the line with Gordon Johnson, Managing Director at Vertical Group. Gordon, you had another stock that you had some research out on today. Could you give us that stock and the symbol and what you have for us?
Yeah, so it's GrafTech. The symbol is EAF. They effectively make graphite, ultra high performance graphite electrode material that goes into the process to make electric arc furnace steel. Here's the perception. There's 5 buys, 0 holds, 1 sell on the stock. You can guess who the sell is. That's us. We initiated with the buy at 21. The stock went to 17. We realized we were wrong. We downgraded it to sell. It dropped to 10. It's back up to 12. Here's the problem, very simply. The world, everyone that covers this stock that we talk to, believes there's a shortage of petroleum needle coke, which you use to make ultra-high performance graphite electrodes. We believe that is completely incorrect due to ramps from Phillips 66, Seadrift, as well as 2 key players in China that we don't think people are capturing. In addition to that, Tokai Carbon, who makes ultra-high performance graphite electrodes, raised their prices in January from like roughly $11,000 to $14,000. And everybody got excited. The problem with that is their contracts are based on a 6-month basis. So when they negotiated second half 18 prices in June of 2018 of 11,000, right after they did that, prices jumped to 14,000. So they missed all that. So they negotiated with their customers that they were going to raise prices in January to capture that. That's backward looking. The Indian graphite electrode producers, HEG and Graphite India, in the first quarter last week, cut their prices for Q1 by 10%. The reason is because Chinese graphite electrode material of the ultra-high performance level is being widely accepted globally, including by the likes of Nucor and AK Steel, and it's putting pressure on global players. The point is this. Consensus is that graphite electrode prices are rising. The reality, we believe, is that they're falling. And when that becomes consensus, We believe these stocks are going to come under pressure. We would highlight Graphite India and HEG are down roughly 10% today in today's trading session. We believe the reason is because they are making it clear that they are cutting prices. That is not an EAF stock. It's not in Tokai Carbon stock. And we believe it's going to become a theme over the coming weeks as these Indian graphite electrode producers report earnings. And we don't think it's currently known.
Gordon, what does this say about China as a whole, though?
So if prices are falling, another good question, it would suggest China's weak. Look, there's a lot of data points that people track in China, but I think the most important is credit. So remember, guys, we've been talking for years. In 2015, late 2015, early 2016, you had the great commodity scare. And we were standing on our high horse talking about how right we were. And then we got smacked in the face in the back half of 16. But the debt service on a monthly basis in China then was about 800 billion CNY per month. That number is now 1.5 trillion CNY per month. That's how much it costs to roll over China's existing debts because they've just been issuing so much debt. So if their monthly credit isn't above 1.5 trillion, you're not going to see the growth that I think everybody is hoping and looking for. And their total social financing has not been coming in above that number. So we think things in China get worse, not weighs on steel prices and also graphite electrode prices.
All right, and then Gordon, so before we holler at you, just to recap for a minute, so you have sell ratings on both Tesla and EAF, correct? You have price targets?
We have a sell rating on Tesla. We believe by the end of this year, the stock will be $88. We have a sell rating on GraphTech, and we believe by the end of this year, the stock will be at the $10 level. Those are both significant returns. We will be aggressively shorting both right now. We think China disappoints. In the first half of this year, from a data perspective, we think growth continues to slow. We think their stimulus efforts have been very small and targeted at stability, not growth, and we think the market has that dynamic wrong.
All right. Gordon Johnson, Managing Director of the Vertical Group. Gordon, bearish as always. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Take care.
All right. All right, that was Gordon Johnson, folks. I do, those of you watching live, I do apologize for the AMAT chart that's been on the screen for the past 20 minutes. We're having some video gremlins today. So
the video's frozen.
You're
getting a radio show here today.
You got our docile.
We don't know why.
You got our docile voices to get you through the show here. But let's get to
Spencer, I just want to say great job there. Really did. I thought you just did a fantastic job with that interview there. I was like, going to hop in and
I was scared to hop in.
I don't know, man.
I hopped in once and I was like, and I got a good question out of him. He's wound up today.
No,
I had to get out from
he's
under
great.
My desk, man.
Holy cow.
No, but
I was scared.
You have to.
Stood up.
I didn't want to tell him, but I like Tesla.
Yeah, look, that's one man's opinion. Obviously, do your own research before you
informational purposes only, guys.
Before you do anything.
It was informational purposes.
A lot to digest there between, you know, what's it about the Tesla?
As the P's are rolling over here, we're down 5 now. We started the show, we're up 5. We're giving back 10. Drogster not helping the market here. TLT getting a nice rip. We know that's bad for probably the banks. The banks are all looking very weak here this morning. European banks, we can go to the bloodbath happening over there right now. Deutsche Bank down 4%. Barclays trading down. ING is down here as well, down 25 cents in the pre-market. I know it hasn't traded here yet, but it's offered down, which is over 3%. So, and it's active already. So you've got a pretty good hit on the European banks. It is spilling over into our banks as well. Citigroup is now down over 1%. Bank of America approaching is down 0.7%. Morgan Stanley down 0.7%. You also got JP Morgan down 0.6%. So the banks are starting to roll over. Bristol Myers reported. We haven't got to that report yet. So I think I want to jump over there. Big Pharma here. Bristol Myers disappointing the streets this morning. Spencer, that's your cue.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I was recapping what we had just discussed with Brent on the news desk with Gordon. I was recapping it. Repeat your question. I'm sorry.
Crystal Myers.
Okay.
BMY.
I can't. I had one headphone in and okay. BMY Q4 EPS 94 cents versus an 85 cent estimate. Nice beat there. Sales 5.97 versus 5.99. $1 billion. So EPS beat, sales miss for the Q4. They did reaffirm their fiscal year EPS guidance, however. So that is in line and reaffirmed with what they had previously given.
I don't know. What are your thoughts? Ooh. Are technically? Well, you had a nice run up. So you know what? Bristol Myers has run up from the lows. They hit it so hard on the Celgene acquisition and they brought it back almost to where it was. Now it starts, you know, the $50 becomes resistance here. I guess that's resistance here again. I think you got people who will be interested in this. You ever anywhere near 45, 46 bucks, I think the buy the dippers will come in.
Yeah.
I don't know if 70s are going to be that early, though.
I'm just looking at the move that you had after they did that deal. Perfect. Easy one. 6-point move from 44.30 to 50.40. So you take half of that, 47.5. I think, you know, it's still $1.20 away. Shorts be looking to cover. Pre-market low, didn't quite get there. Your pre-market low is 48.12, but I really like the front. If I could see this 47.5, I don't know about today, but I like that area as a 50% retracement in BMY.
What about
Celgene? Obviously going to trade off this. So if you're trading Celgene, it just follows. It's dollar for dollar, so not percents, because the ratio was one, I believe it was one share exactly, Bristol Myers. So every dollar that Bristol Myers falls, Celgene typically falls $1 too. Now the risk arbs aren't playing this perfectly yet because there's obviously, you know, it's trading with a significant discount. There's other factors involved here, but other things being equal, the stock will track close to a dollar for dollar.
What about our big loser of the morning here, McCormick, MKC, at least big loser on my screener. Q4 EPS, $1.67 versus $1.70 estimate, sales 1.49 versus $1.55 billion. So misses on both Q4 EPS and sales numbers, the fiscal year guidance. That EPS guidance they gave also very light. 517 to 527 was the range they gave. 540 was the estimate. So light guidance, earnings miss, McCormick.
Getting killed here. Joel, find us some support on this one. This is a big move here for McCormick.
It's funny. D's in the Google chat, same thing, McCormick. I think about spices. I guess people are not using spices on their food anymore. You are crushing the former low of the move here. Oh, my gosh. That was at 134.
It's so ugly, man.
Yeah. Long-term resistance. Whew, we'll see that.
Long-term
at that
support
old...
all the way that 122 back on September 27.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Came this far. Why not their last $1.50?
Yeah, 122 even September, and then after that it opens up to 116.65. But it's stopped going down, right, at this point. I mean,
you're looking for something positive.
Yeah. I keep an eye on that pre-market low. You never know. You get these scenarios, and I'll just, you know, Arconic. You know, they beat it down to levels where you never saw in the regular session. But
Arconic, though, wasn't on earnings. Arconic was on a deal that broke, and they knocked it down lower than when the deal rumors were even started. So it just got overdone at 15. I don't know if you can say this is necessarily overdone here. It's a disappointing report. And I'll tell you, it's spilling over into all the food stocks. You typically don't see the spice maker spill over into the food stock, but you were seeing it here this morning because I got every food stock heavy in the red. GIS is trading down 90 cents. KHC is trading down 1.5% here this morning. Conagra Foods is down 1.6%. Campbell's Soup even, it's not traded yet, but it's offered down over 40 cents, which will put down over 1% here as well. So you've got, and Hershey's, just go across the board. Every food stock is getting hit here this morning.
Okay. All right. 8:56, Spencer. We cover all of our earning stocks. No. We haven't done any ratings yet.
And we didn't, I feel like we'd be remiss if we'd be remiss to not cover Ford. So let's do Ford real fast. The Q4 EPS.
Crack it.
30 cents versus a 32 cent estimate. Sales 41.8. Versus $37 billion, so EPS miss and the sales beat for Ford here.
It didn't even move on the earnings. It's not moving here now. And we've obviously had sales already from them. I don't know. It's $8.35 bid for 100,000 shares. It's thick. It had an ugly candle yesterday. Let's see what happens. But this report stock isn't even moving on it.
Yeah, and I mean, it has a series of lows here. I'm just looking at the dailies, right? The 830 area. Eight, really, you've had last five lows right around that 100,000 share bid is here. So not moving off the earnings report. I don't know what its prospects are for moving for today. This is Tesla. We just covered that a lot here.
There's so much we did not get to cover. We never even mentioned a rating here yet. So let's quickly go through some of the ratings that I highlighted. There was a lot of them, actually. Duluth, DLTH, catching an upgrade at DA Davidson. DA Davidson moves stocks. I know a lot of people don't follow them, but they move stocks when they – I don't know why that is, but I always notice DA Davidson really can move stocks. ICPT upgraded at Needham. You've got Kimberly-Clark getting an upgrade at Morgan Stanley. You've got the Goose, and this is one I do want to talk about. GOOS getting downgraded at Wells Fargo. They called it the most expensive stock in the apparel universe. Not a good report here for Goose. It's trading down 4% in the pre-market. It got hit from 70 down to 40. It rallied a bit. I just wonder if this gets the selling kickstarted again. I would not be buying the dip on this one here. That's a pretty damning report here from Wells Fargo, very influential broker, and I would not be surprised if the damage continues here. It needs to hold the low from 4 days ago. That's 46.89. Let's see what it does there. But I think if you're buying it here, I don't know if I'm fading. Not off that report.
Pulling back here off the report, down $1.86. Someone's nibbling here at 47. You've had several lows here in the 47 handle. You're up at 47.79. So keep an eye on 47. You had three lows right in that area. Four lows. One, two, three, four out of five lows. So I like 47 here, and that stands the pre-market low. Better place to cover short than to try a long. I did not realize how much this thing got killed in December there. Yeah,
but the valuation was always crazy.
High, yep.
Like, and that's what happens. We know when, you know, valuations start to come in, like when market starts to come in, the ones with the highest PEs are going to get hit the hardest, and that's really what happened here. You know, is there a case here still? Yeah, but I'm just looking at the technicals, and I mean – It looked like it was tiring in the recent rally here to me. And now you get a report from an analyst calling it the most expensive stock in the apparel industry. That makes me just scared on it.
All right. What else you want to cover? One more rating there, Spencer?
Oh, no, Dennis got the big ones.
Okay.
Yeah,
Dennis. Did I miss anything?
So importantly, you got the most of the ones that are moving. CenturyLink, I don't know if you mentioned that. CTL is also moving this morning on a downgrade from Guggenheim. They downgrade to sell, announced an $11 price target on CTL. That'll pretty much do it for our show today. As far as earnings, I'm watching after the bell. We have Starbucks, we have Intel, we have Discover. Those are the main ones that I'm watching for after the
Western
close today.
Digital too.
Western Digital, right. And so maybe those for Norfolk Southern, Alaska Air, E-Trade, all reporting after the close today, so keep an eye on that. Thanks to both our guests today, both Gordon Johnson and Mark Chaykin, for joining us. Thanks to all of you in both of our chat rooms on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. Please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. We'll get our video working for you tomorrow. In the meantime, folks, have a good day, and we'll see you on Friday.